Okay, if we could find our seats, we'll get started with the business meeting. Okay. Welcome. Can you hear me? Yes. Okay. Good. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the 51st membership meeting of the Mulch and Soil Council. I'm Bob Lagasse again, Executive Director of the Council, and I want to express our appreciation for you all participating in our business meeting today. We're going to review council activities, general committee work, etc. I ask you to bear with me. It's a new computer, and I just lost all my notes. So we're going to be experiencing this firsthand. And first, I want to, again, thank our sponsors, our diamond sponsors, AgriCoatings and ColorBiotics, our platinum sponsors, Social Marks Media and Vermeer, our gold sponsors, Invinia and T.H. Glennon, and our silver sponsors, Chromascape, LoadScan, Comtech, and ProAmpact for their generous support of the council. First item on our business agenda is a report from our president, Jim Weber. So please welcome Jim to the podium.
Thank you, Bob. By the way, our industry certainly faced a lot of challenges this year: fuel prices, labor rates, transportation, trucking, inability to get trucks, truck prices hiked up, pallet shortages, not being able to get any. So we faced the same ones that you did. So. There are several days that we couldn't even run production because we didn't have pallets. So we did a little something about it. We went and purchased some pallet making equipment, and today we're producing about 500 pallets a day. And this is, so there's two methods that you can go. You can either cut it out of logs, which we take logs that come in from our yard waste, and we process wood out of it to make pallets, or you can buy finished grade lumber, and so we do both. The quickest, fastest way to produce the pallet is with the, and cheaper on purchasing the equipment is buying the grade lumber. And we usually buy seconds or thirds or fourths, and quite frankly, I'll tell you how I did it. I just went to the local lumber stores, got the name off the side of the bundle, called the company, and asked them if they had rejects or pallet material, pallet lumber to make pallets out of it, and they are all had that wood readily available. So we buy it by the semi-load, and we buy it by the board foot. So when you're making your runners, you want to make them out of 2x4s, 12 foot in length. And this machine here, I purchased a Go Fast double head saw. And that machine there will take a 12-foot board, cut it twice, and make three runners all in one cut. So if you're buying an 8-foot 2x4, you're spending twice the labor to make your runners as you would if you used the 12-foot 2x4. And then the top boards and the bottom boards, we try to purchase 2x4s and 2x6s 10-foot. Pallet is 40 inches wide, so 10 feet is 120 inches. You get three cuts out of a 2x4x10. And then this is just a saw that we ripped the board to make three boards out of it. Now, if I had my choice to do it over again, I would have bought a two-head saw because I used twice the labor to make my pallet boards with this machine because I'm running it through picking up the thicker piece, run that back through again. If there's a double head saw, I push it through one time and it's done. And then this machine here, this is a notcher. So this thing, this machine here, it will go faster than you can possibly feed it. Literally 1,000 boards, 1,500 boards in an hour, not a problem. And then the byproduct that you get from it is pine shavings. We put it in big super sacks. We sell it to our customer base. And then you can either produce the pallet by hand, with a nail gun. There is roughly 72 nails in a pallet, and so you can have employees sit there with a nail gun and put them together, assemble them that way. We purchased this machine just because for how hard it is to get labor today, I found it to be easier to just have a machine that will assemble the pallets for me than to try to get people to stay on board nailing pallets together with a nail gun. This machine here is about $100,000. So the takeaway from this is if you're using 100% pure cut lumber, what I purchased was a GoFast trim saw. There's many trim saws out there. You can get on machinerytrader.com and find other pieces like this, or Lumberman's Exchange. There's a lot of machines like this on Lumberman's Exchange. Bruco or a Wood Miser resaw, they're about $40,000. I also purchased a GoFast notcher. And then the Pallet Chief automated nailer is about $100,000. So you've got about $260,000 in investment to do it that way. And your cost is going to be somewhere approximately $7.50. Now, that's $7.50 you're making a brand new pallet. Brand new pallets in the marketplace sell for about $20 a pallet. You literally, what we've tried to do with some of our suppliers is say, hey, I'll trade you a brand new pallet in exchange for two used pallets. So certainly that's a possibility. The other option is if you're using a 50-50 blend, which is you're buying the half your wood is grade lumber, or you're buying it by the semi-load, and then you're taking the Wood Miser saw and you're cutting some of the boards with the Wood Miser. That Wood Miser is going to cost you about an extra $125,000 with a trim saw to go along with it. You'd have about a $385,000 investment, but your pallet cost would go down about $1.50. And then the third way is just 100% pure, making pallets out of logs coming in if you accept yard waste at any of your sites. The only disadvantage by going this way is you won't get enough throughput. You'll get at best 200, 250 pallets a day that you'll make by using the recycled method. I found a hybrid or 100% pure getting it, buying the lumber already pre-cut, just simplified the operation. So, but certainly if you have any questions, I saw a couple people take a picture of this. Bob will give you a copy of this, or I'll email it to you if you want. But any questions, just see me afterwards. I'll share with you everything that we're doing. All right, that's all I've got.
Any questions? There's a practical laboratory example of a major problem in how it can be addressed. Our next item is the treasurer's report. With Joe Ertl's permission, I'll go through the audit report submitted by our independent auditors, Carr Graham and Ertl, I think it is. Our assets on our cash equivalent, our assets and cash equivalents are $653,000. Our accounts receivable was $33,000. Our restricted cash is $5,700. The restricted cash is the holdings of our foundation. The foundation is owned by the councils, and it has an overlapping board. So that's why we file consolidated reports. It includes both the foundation and the council. The council has no current fiscal year active projects, but its residuals are reported as $5,700. The foundation was responsible for producing things like the Proposition 65 risk analysis and our report debunking spontaneous combustion in lawn and garden applications. So if you haven't seen those reports, or if you want them, they're available on the website. Or let me know and I'll be happy to send you a copy. Our property assets, $28,000, represents analytical equipment that was purchased for the certification program that does our XRF heavy metals testing. So our total assets are $720,000. Our accounts payable is $4,400. Our deferred revenues are $255,000, which includes dues and certification fees that straddled the fiscal year. So everything's on an anniversary date, but if you joined in July 1, your next, your membership's good till June 30th. But we have a calendar fiscal year, so the auditor only accounts for in the current year, July 1 to December 31, and holds in this deferred revenues the January 1 to June 30th amount. So that's what that is residual dues. For the for partial year memberships. Unrestricted net assets are $460,000, bringing us back to $720,000. Our income, generally most associations of our nature have most of their income from dues. Ours are spread across three significant areas. Dues are 39% of our annual income, the annual meeting is 23%, certification is 34%, and we have 1% for investments and 2% for advertising. Those numbers relate to $143,000 for the annual meeting. Advertising was $13,000, certification is $210,000, and member dues are $241,000 with interest of $3,000. So our total revenue for 2021 was $611,000. Our expenses, our administrative expenses are 20%, and our program expenses are 80%. So we spend most of our time and most of our activities on program services. We have relatively low overhead. Those numbers relate, come back to certification, $185,000, annual meetings and seminars for last year, $132,000, that was Memphis. Our member support expenditures were $121,000. We have no active special projects or research projects for the foundation. Our G&A was $111,000. So our total expenses were $550,000 with a net revenue of $61,000. We're not a big organization, but we're fiscally solid. Anybody have any questions about the treasurer's report? Do we have a motion to approve the treasurer's report? Randy for the motion and Rick for the second. We have a motion and second for the to approve the treasurer's report. Is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye. Opposed? Abstain. The ayes have it. All right. Our annual meeting. Report on membership for the last year we were 111 members. This year we're 121, and I think we're probably actually 124 because things have changed since I did this. But you can see in our various producer members categories A through G, we have 19 in category A, 25 in B, 20 in C, 7 in D, 4 in E, 1 in F, and 3 in G. We have 38 affiliates, 3 associates. Affiliates are equipment manufacturers and suppliers. Associates are service suppliers. We have 1 nonprofit. for a total of 121 members. Our meeting attendance this year, again, is the largest we've had in 50 years. We have 86 producer members here, 81 affiliates and associates, 24 non-members. Again, those are the yellow badges, which we would encourage everyone to talk to and encourage them to become white badges and members. We have staff and speakers of 14, one press representative for a total of 206 participants at the meeting. Prior to 2013, our average attendance was 80. In 2013, we broke 100 for 113 people, and we've gone up steadily since then. Not large jumps. This is a significant jump for us, and we really appreciate all the industry support that the council is getting. Looking at program activities, we do representation for the council with a number of organizations, APCO being one of them, which is the Association of American Plant Food Control Officials, where we lobby on the behalf of soil manufacturers for soil products. And we also do NIASMA, the Compost Council, and a number of other organizations that we attend, participate with regularly, and the National Conference on Weights and Measures. We did a supply chain survey early this year because of the issues that came out of 2021 and some of the inventory and supply problems, and we were able to issue that, I believe it was in March of this year, hoping to give you some insight in how to manage your business activities and planning for this season and beyond. We also advised on the ELDT, or the entry-level driving training, after FMCSA changed the rules in February 7th of this year that prohibited any in-house training. You couldn't have a new CDL driver without having a certificate from an FMCSA authorized training program. There were some workarounds that we announced, we investigated and announced to the membership, and those were published in the newsletter. And it was also published in an industry newsletter, probably in the, I think it was in the May issue. We also have investigated the H-2B non-ag temp worker visa program. This is something that some people are looking at as a possibility to fill the gap on labor availability. You can get non-immigrant visas. These are temporary visas. They're allowed to be in the country for 10 months, generally coming from Latin America on a very, very active visa program that unfortunately has regular caps. Now, these are not H-1A. These are not agricultural. So these are jobs that are non-ag related, but are temporary and seasonal in nature. So you have to have a seasonal job. You have to demonstrate that your local labor pool cannot fill that job, and that you can describe the job in certain terms that would be advertisable both locally and in foreign areas. You have to work with the State Department, Homeland Security, your state labor department, and a foreign recruiter. It's a very complex program. It's subject to caps on the visas. It comes in two terms, half a year, first season being October through March, then March through September. The March through September season is the summer season that's heavily utilized by landscape and hospitality trades. So those caps go out, get filled almost immediately. The first season would be if you could get your labor force in November or December, you would have an opportunity probably to get a better chance to get some visa workers in. Cost is going to be about $4,000 to $6,000 for the process. If you're interested in We investigated this and the possibility of could the council play a role in facilitating this for the members. It is more complex than we have the resources, but we know who you need to talk to and can put you in touch with that. And if you want to investigate this further, is there anybody in the room that's really interested in investigating this H-2B program? If you contact me, we'll try to put together a webinar with two authorities at DCLRS and a recruiting organization that we have spoken to, and you can get further information on it. It is, like I say, it's not a simple topic, but there are people who are successfully using it. So that's another attempt by the council to address a labor issue, as is the program today, talking about looking at your own workforce and your own HR issues and how we can expand in our existing markets. We have new expanded state legislative and regulatory monitoring program. I'll mention a little more about that in a minute. We're doing an annual sales growth survey comparing gross sales in the industry from this year compared to last year. We just got the raw data on that this last week. We'll be publishing a report on that in the December newsletter. We just finished the plant managers training course in Las Vegas in August. That was 35 participants, very well received, good program. I would advise that I was working with NIST just a week ago and talking to David Sefcik, who is their chief trainer on weights and measures. And David said, told me that he had just completed a training program that was requested by the Western Weights and Measures Association, which is 11 states, say from Montana down to New Mexico and west. They had 45 people in the class from 11 states that requested specifically training on testing mulch and soil. If you're in those 11 states, western states, training proceeds, hopefully. In this case, you should expect some testing on weights and measures in the western region. We had some training that occurred in Florida earlier this year, probably in March, and we advised members when that happened, if everybody that was doing business in that region. So when we hear of these circumstances, we try to keep you abreast of what's happening in the industry. We're also doing a consumer survey on mulch. That survey should be out. It's a national consumer survey that's going to be conducted by Technometrica Market Research to update our data on consumer utilization of mulch and soil products, where we get our statistics for how much volume the industry generates and utilizes annually. Our last figures were date back to about 2015, so we're going to update those in a new survey. Certification committee is progressing. We'll report a little more on that, but recently we put out a new labeling guideline for mulch, certified mulches, because certified mulches under certain circumstances have to have ingredient labels, ingredient statements on their labels, and there was some confusion about when and what it should say. So there was a guideline drafted to consolidate all the rules that were in different places on the website and in our records, so you could find them all in one place easily. And that was published in the last newsletter. It's also available on the website. And we're looking, the certification committee is looking into whatever efforts it might be able to do to create another category for organic, certified organic programs for lawn and garden. That's new and it's in process. We'll keep you advised on its development. Over the year, we've done newsletters, special reports, bulletins when issues come up, and we hope you all get them. If you're not getting the bulletins or if you're not receiving the newsletter notices, please let us know. If there's someone else in your company you would like to receive these, also give us a call. we can put them on the distribution list. I mean, the Mulch and Soil Research Foundation, again, is not currently working on any active projects, but we do have the Proposition 65 risk assessment and the spontaneous combustion report that is available. Does anybody have any questions? I mentioned that we had a state and federal legislative monitoring program. We've been doing this for some time, and this is our intent, is to keep you abreast of developing rules, regulations, and laws so that you don't get sandbagged by as an unintended or even an intended target of new legislation. We lost our contractor in March. He folded, and we had to redevelop a new system, and we've been redeveloping that system, which has come back, I think, even stronger than before. It's more flexible. We're able to offer more information, and we can be more selective in what we're searching for across all 50 states for legislation or potential laws, as well as any regulations that mention keywords like mulch, soil, potting mix, potting, planting mix, compost, biosolids, anything that any of you basically touch. We have about 30 keywords that we search on a regular basis. We also have flexibility that if you have a topic that you're interested in and you want to know if there's any state, particularly any one or more state that is contemplating or dealing in this subject matter, let us know and we can run a report for that and tell you immediately if there's anything on any docket at that time. We can also do that. We also have that for regulatory. And now what happens many times is they didn't change the law, but they changed the regulation. And you weren't part of that process. And all of a sudden, you find out that there was a regulation 6 months ago that says you can't do something that you need to do. So we try to monitor changes in regulations at the state and the federal level. This address here, mulchandsoilcouncil.org/membership/bill_monitor1.php, will take you to a monitoring page that will give you instructions on how the program works and four maps. There's a map for mulch bills, laws, soil laws, different one, another map for soil regulations, and another map for mulch regulations. So there's four maps involved, and you can view. Basically, you get a map that shows you which states by color have active laws, and you can click on the state and see how many, and if you click again, it'll give you the actual list of the laws. You can read the summary. You can click on that, and you can go straight to the law, see who is proposing it. You can get a copy of the bill. You can get we make a support, neutral, or oppose assessment or recommendation on it, plus we make a brief statement so that you don't have to, you have some gist of what that's about without having to read the whole thing. So you can decide if you want to oppose or support any legislation that may be in your area or in your business area. There'll be more about this later in the fourth quarter, probably in December, because the new legislative sessions will start in January. In most states, a year only run from January to March, April, or May. We'll try to keep you advised of that. The certification program, currently we have 58 premium potting soils, 5 standard potting soils, 58 landscape soils and amendments, 3 specialty soils, 162 mulches. We have 1 application in process, so our total number right now is 287 certified products. The list of products can be found on our website under the certification tab at the bottom under more information. Anybody have any questions? I'm trying to move quickly so I don't delay cocktail hour. Next is our election of directors. Each year, we have directors who serve a three-year term. Their term expires. There's four directors in each term set. All directors serve without compensation or travel reimbursement. We do buy them dinner three times a year, but that's it. So they serve as a service to the industry, and without them, we really can't function efficiently. I want to thank our current directors of the class of 2019 to 2022. Those positions are held by MSC Secretary Treasurer Joe Ertl of Old Castle Lawn and Garden, Dr. K. Young Jung of Sun Grow Horticulture from Agawam, Rick Mahoney from Garrick LLC in Cleveland, and Kimberly Rogowski from the Scotts Company in Marysville, Ohio. So, thank you for that. We published a notice of a call for volunteers and nominations in August, and the nominations committee, we did receive some inquiries, but they did not result in nominations. So the nominating committee did investigate whether the current directors were interested in running for re-election. All of the current incumbent directors are willing to serve another three-year term, which would be from 2022 to 2025. That would include Joe Ertl, Dr. K. Young Jung, Rick Mahoney, and Kimberly Rogowski. That's the nomination, the slate accepted by the board. So are there any further nominations or volunteers interested in running for this election? And if not, would entertain a motion from the floor to elect the proposed slate by acclamation. Who did that? Brad? I need a second. Who? Ed. Jim? We have a nomination and a second to elect the slate by acclamation. All those in favor say aye. Opposed? Abstain. Congratulations and thank you. Yes. Next is annual recognition. So we have some recognitions we'd like to make. First being, I'd like to call Jim Weber, our president, up to help with the recognitions. Lonnie? First recognition we'd like to make is for Joe Ertl as the annual meeting program chair for this annual meeting. Joe did an outstanding job and worked every other week in communication with staff, et cetera. Did that work? You good? Okay. Next is director service recognition. So we'd like to recognize our directors for their most recent service. That would include Joe Ertl. Young. Okay. Rick Mahoney. And Kimberly Rogowski. So, our heartfelt thank you for your service, and I want to recognize what you've done for the council, as well as congratulate you on your reelection. Next one is a special certificate of appreciation presented to a gentleman who has been a dedicated leader and shared his unique expertise as an instructor for the MSC Plant Managers Training Course on Weights and Measures since 1999. Don Duggar. Don has been teaching weights and measures since the first survey that was done by NIST in 1996 that ended up with 80% failure rate for the industry. Ergo, the institution of our annual or biennial plant manager's training course on weights and measures. And he's done a yeoman's job, and he's always been, if you need me, I'll be there no matter what. And he's always been there no matter what. So thank you so much, Don. We are going to miss you in retirement. All right, so those are the special service awards. We have another award. Distinguished Award that was put together in recognition of John Lieber. Many of you may have known John. He was the treasurer of the council, served on the board for many years, and was tragically killed in a plant accident when a retaining wall on the plant site fell, and John was crushed, saving his other employees from being crushed. And it was after that the board wanted to recognize John's service, because he was an extraordinary board member and did a great deal for the council. So the John Lieber Distinguished Service Award is given to an individual or organization who advances the goals and objectives of the council and the industry in a distinguished manner and in an era of dedicated service. And this year's award was voted by the board of directors to the Mulch Maids. They even have shirts. Okay. Carol Ledbetter and J.C. McGowan, which is J.C. McGowan Legacy, that's my wife, have been doing audit trips for the council, collecting certified audit products for annual testing for 16 years. The first time they went out was just after a hurricane in Florida, which was before I, it was before you had the GPS systems. They didn't even have cell phones. And after the hurricane, they couldn't find half the plants. The signs were all blown down, and the hotels were full because all the houses had been destroyed, and people were living in hotels. So they were wandering around Florida as their first event, collecting product for certification testing. They've been doing that for 16 years. They call themselves the Mulch Mage, and they even went out and made shirts for themselves.
We used to be the Mulch Babes until we got old.
I wasn't going to say that part. But Carol and Carol have decided that they can no longer drive. They make 5 trips a year, 11, 12, 1,500 miles a trip in a week each. Collected this last year over 7,000 miles and over 450 products. And they've been doing that for 16 years. If you've ever ridden in a van full of wet mulch, they come home and throw the clothes away. It's an interesting job, and they've enjoyed it forever, but it's just at this point it's time to retire and come off the road. So as they do, we're bringing new staff on that you'll meet. Monty Nelson will be taking over the audit trips this coming season, and he is not retirement age. But the board wanted to recognize Carol and JC for their contribution for all these years and the support that have made the certification program possible. So we have two awards. Okay. Come down here where you can get Jim. Need your help. You all come down here. You have your plaque. John Leader Award. And they're both in names are on there. But come on. One has one on one and one has the other's name. Because they're arguing for a decade. We just want to spell one. One drives and one navigates. Now, try to make plaques like that locally when you get one of them in your office constantly and you're trying to hide it, and then you get here and keep the other one, keep your hands out of the box because they don't know they're getting it. They're difficult, but they do good work, and we do appreciate it, and it's been a long, enjoyable ride, but almost sad when you realize you can't do it anymore. All right. So thank you all. And thank you to the board. We don't need this. We know the election results. The 52nd annual meeting which is next year's annual meeting, will take place October 10 to 12, 2023 at the DeSoto Hotel in Savannah, Georgia. It's a beautiful property, right downtown Savannah. And it's going to be a great program. So we invite everybody to join us in Savannah next October. Mark your calendars, please. That's the end of the annual meeting program. Does anybody have any new business they'd like to discuss? Any old business? If not, is there a motion to adjourn? Steve Liffers, Kent Roeder. There's no discussion on that, so all those in favor say aye. Opposed? Thank you so much. Our opening reception next is at 4:30. Boy, that was fast. In the Carolina Ballroom, which is next door, and it's sponsored by Vermeer. So that starts at 4:30. And look forward to seeing you there. You'll also meet all of our exhibitors that have set up in the next room for the entire evening. So thank you again to all of our sponsors, and thank you for making this the largest meeting that we've had. We appreciate your support. If any of the award recipients want a cover to protect your awards while you take them home, I've got your covers.